All right, the time is 3 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. A very good morning to you all, the ELFM listeners, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop. This is the show that is dedicated to you, to providing you with latest update on the economy, entrepreneurship, and of course public policy and trade as well. So please do not forget to always tune in. And I'm yours, Loisa Shemin, and of course I'll be with you until the usual time, that is now the 7:30, just to give you that usual update. And before I get into the update of today internationally, please do not forget to follow us on, rather connect with us on our social media platforms, ELFM from Namibia, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Village Newspaper page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Do not also forget to download our app, ELFM app, that you find us on your Google Play Store and, of course, your App Store, just to stay informed wherever you are finding yourself. And do not forget to subscribe on our WhatsApp channel for the daily news update and, of course, the newspaper alerts. And, of course, the newspaper, it's out today. Do not forget just to ask for it. What you have to do is just to send through your details, and that now includes your number, your name, and you can, and plus also your email, and you'll get able to get the newspaper any day that it's released. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And do not forget to download the IMBA app on your Google Play Store and plus your App Store, and you can able to have the app on your phone. Now, to start off internationally, is that the farmers who felt fled at the violence in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo are now slowly returning to their homes, towns, and villages, but some have been also shocked to find their land occupied by others, even as many remain determined to rebuild and re-establish their farms despite recent setbacks. Matika, listen to this.
Has very fertile land, and locals grow a variety of vegetables that have a ready market in Goma and other nearby cities and towns. But when clashes hit the area, many people left, including Taboba and his family. When he returned, he was shocked to find his land already occupied by another family.
When we fled the war, we went to Kanya Ruchinya, where we spent 3 years living in very bad conditions. We spent days hungry, and when we returned, we found people working in our fields already producing these cabbages. I had to pay to have rights to this harvest. Relatives lent me money to get it back in order to restart farming.
The 48-year-old farmer said he paid $600 to get his farm back. This year, M23 rebels pressured displaced Congolese to return to Kibumba, which is now under its control. At the local market, traders say they are relieved it has been reopened.
We spent 3 years in Kanyaruchinya receiving little humanitarian aid so children wouldn't die of hunger. But when the war ended in this area, we returned home. Now we work, we have taken back our fields, and here we have also resumed market work so as to take care of our children.
When the market was closed, prices of vegetables skyrocketed.
When this market wasn't functioning, vegetable prices had risen so much. It was impossible to find vegetables like cauliflower because this is its source. But now that the war seems to have eased, residents have returned. We are glad they now sell us cabbages, onions, and all the other vegetables.
In Taboba, a father of eight says locals want peace, and many are tired of constantly having to rebuild their lives from zero due to the perennial conflict in the area.
We only want peace, not war. War sets us back every time. Before, we had cows, sheep, and other livestock, but today we have nothing. Our houses were destroyed. We want peace to return.
Since January, the unprecedented advance by M23 rebels has forced 1.2 million people from their homes in North and South Kivu provinces. The UN's migration agency says that during the same period, more than 350,000 households have returned to homes they had earlier vacated.
All right, to move on to the next item is that the most banks in the region remain closed and there are reports of a serious shortage of the local currency. Now, some traders also say the M23 labels have imposed new taxes that have increased the cost of doing business.
In the eastern Congolese town of Rubaya, rebels have quickly tightened their grip on a slice of Congo's vast mineral wealth. The mines here produce around one-sixth of the world's supply of cotton, which is crucial to the production of smartphones and other electronic devices. The M23 now charges a 15% tax on the value of that cotton production, according to rebel officials and traders. Rebel administrators are rolling out other levies too, and have imposed duties as high as 20% on small-time traders who sell staples like bananas, charcoal, and clothes.
We have serious problems with the taxes. Customers no longer come, but at the end of each month, we are still asked to pay the Nanga tax. It is becoming very difficult for us to find the money to pay this tax.
They can bring you a basket of lemons for about $6, but it will take more than 3 days before you can sell it all because the city is experiencing a major crisis. The banks are not operational. We are selling, but there are no buyers because there are fewer people in the city who can afford to buy. That's our current difficulty. We lay out the goods, but there are no customers.
Having seized the city of Goma in late January and then Bukavu in February, M23 is keen to demonstrate that life there is returning to normal. The group has nominated governors in the respective provinces of those cities and is training thousands of local administrators to take control of the civil service. But paralysis in the banking sector reveals things are far from normal.
The banks should understand that the money they hold belongs to the Congolese people's savings. They have no right to shut down the banks for any reason whatsoever. It has now been 2 months since the banks were closed.
The banks in rebel-held towns remain closed under pressure from the country's central bank in Kinshasa. Meanwhile, the DRC government continues to pay the salaries of teachers, doctors, and other civil servants in these areas. But like other locals with bank accounts, they too struggle to access their funds. Kinshasa says it will not authorize banks to reopen in rebel-held territory because that would only serve to legitimize the M23 presence there.
In the face of this obstinacy from Kinshasa, or this madness from Kinshasa, we are setting up a mechanism, and we have announced that if such a deadline is exceeded, we will find alternative solutions. But for now, people are operating through a purely mechanical, manual system. Taxes are being paid by hand and so on. But this must not last.
Analysts say the long-term success of the M23 movement requires showing that they can bring order and prosperity to the regions they already hold.
All right, the time is 11 o'clock, 11 minutes in 6 minutes, and now 11 minutes to 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now to move on to the next item in Nigeria is that the Baron tribe in Nigeria's Plateau State has celebrated as them Baron, a festival marking the start of the crop farming season in the country. Now the organizers say the day is marked to salute the resilience of the local community in farming their land despite the difficulties they sometimes face growing crops. Now among other things also. Now to move on, we might take a listen to this specific update.
Of the year when members of the Birom tribe put their best foot forward as they celebrate their culture, beliefs and music. Local music rent the air as men, women and children arrived at the venue of the festival with so much cheer, proud of their long-held heritage. Organizers say the day is marked to, among other things, salute the resilience of the local community in farming their land, despite the difficulties they sometimes face growing their crops.
This event, ushering the rainy season, we pray for a special farming period and a bountiful harvest that will enhance food security.
And for those in attendance, the special occasion cannot be complete without some dancing, as locals make chants seeking good fortunes in the new farming season.
With an estimated population of over 2 million people, the Birom tribe is the largest ethnic group in Plateau State here in northern Nigeria. A majority are farmers and some are hunters. So for over a century, many of them have been named after animals. This heritage was on show for all in attendance as several men arrived to the arena with bows, arrows and cutlasses, taking bold steps as they displayed their hunting prowess. But some younger members of the tribe say things are beginning to change, especially with their names.
My name is Dagyan, and Dagyan means antelope, and that's because I run fast. The antelope is the fastest animal, and that was how I was named. But right about now, there's a transitioning from those days of the hunting age to these days where fate determines what the name is.
Nigeria has a food security challenge, with the United Nations estimating that over 30 million people will be food insecure in the country this year. The Birom people say those statistics are disheartening, but they will continue advocating for people to engage in agriculture. But they say those still tilling their lands to keep Nigeria food secure continue to face many challenges.
With the attacks on the villages and in the communities, no one will go to the farm.
Last month, about 100 people, mostly farmers, were killed by gunmen in the state. The government says it is going after the attackers and will ensure they are prosecuted. It has also promised improved security for farmers and their fields. But for now, members of the Birom community are firmly focused on their special Nzambirom festival. More groups are seen dancing in the belief that they will be protected and preserved by the government as they embark on the cultivation of their farmlands. The Birom people say they will continue with their vocation and ensure the virtues of hard work and tilling the land are transferred to younger generations. They also want more people across Nigeria to emulate them and grow crops to ensure food security in the country.
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item, is that rising water levels are posing a risk to crops in the Lower Orange River region in the Northern Cape. Now, several roads and lower-lying bridges have been closed as the water in the Orange River rises to level last seen during the flood of 2011 in the area.
Was released from the overflowing Vaal and Gariep dams into the Orange River system, leading to the rising water level. This has raised concerns about the impact on production in an industry that is already on the edge due to U.S. tariffs. Chairperson of the Orange River Producers Association, Gabriel Fulyun, joins us for more on this. Good evening, Gabriel. Thank you very much for joining us on the late edition. Now, generally, rain is welcomed by those in the agricultural sector, but too much rain can significantly damage crops, leading to reduced yields and potential crop loss. How have the current water levels impacted your sector, if at all?
Well, at this stage, fortunately, all our products are already harvested, and the raisins factor as well. All of the fruits are already off the vines, but the biggest concern is now the water which is running into the vineyards. That can have a long-term effect on the next crop if the water persists more than 2 weeks in the vineyards itself. Mm-hmm. So fortunately, all our product has already been harvested, but the lower-lying areas for the lucerne and the cotton which have been planted, they're going to have a knock-on effect.
Mm-hmm. So when we say it could have an impact on the next crop, is this now, insofar as soil erosion, is concerned, where it could be an issue of washing away of the topsoil, which could reduce soil fertility?
Washing away the topsoil, that's correct. And if the water stands, say, for 2 to 3 weeks in the block can basically drown, which has effects. If the vines dies, you have to take them out and replant the vines. So for the next few 2 to 3 years, you won't have an income.
Hmm. So at this point, now one assumes that this would also be quite costly if ever it was to be corrected. But is there legitimate fear now, given the water levels, or it's still not that much of an issue as many would want us to believe?
Well, at this stage, the highest peak is at this evening at the Orange River in Upington, the bridge, 7.8 meters, which was the same levels as 2011. And this is the highest point it's been so far, at a flow of 4,300 cubics per second and average speed of between 11 to 13 kilometers per hour. Mm-hmm. So the biggest concern is tonight, and the sluices at the back, the Fall River Dam, has already been closed from 10 to 4 as of this morning. Mm-hmm. So from the next 5 to 6 days, the river will go down.
Sure. But it's quite heartening that at least at this point, harvesting has taken place. But there's also the other issue of the U.S. tariffs that have had your sector quite worried. How have you as an organization received and are looking to respond to the U.S. tariffs?
The U.S. tariffs, which precedents improved on us for, say, from July, the 31%, is going to have a big effect on us for exporting products to the Far East.
Mm-hmm.
Over the last 5 years, we've increased the sector to the USA by 28%. So taking that 28% away, exporting to the USA, we've got to take that back to the old channels, which is the UA and the EU and the UKs.
Mm-hmm. So given that now you might be looking to resuscitate those channels and create just some sort of a market for yourselves, do you see this now as a negative or perhaps as a positive, or that one element that gives impetus to this program of seeking out new markets?
Well, seeking out new markets is always a challenge for us, and luckily the Philippines opened for us. So that is also a new challenging channel which we can use for the future. If the tariffs is increased to 31%, which is not going to make it viable for us to export products to the USA anymore, due to the fact that Chile and Peru is the most competitive country for us, exporting in the same windows as we do. So it's a more lucrative window for them at that stage, and it's not going to be economically viable for us to send products to the USA at those high tariffs.
All right, Gabriel, thank you very much.
Right, there you have it. The time is 20 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is early morning. Skip now to move on to the next item is that the solar solution have risen in demand in Niger, and as Nigerians have turned to what they see as the reliable and, of course, economical source of electricity. Now, access to electricity in Nigeria remains below 20%, but new projects are underway to expand access and reduce reliance on neighboring Nigeria, which exports electricity to the nation. You might take a listen.
Solar panels are a common sight in the streets of Niger, one of the world's sunniest countries. Solar solutions saw a surge in demand after neighboring Nigeria suspended power to the country as part of regional sanctions after Niger's 2023 military coup.
We thank God that the business is doing well, especially in this hot period. There are lots of customers. The business really peaked when Nigeria implemented the power cuts. Since then, some customers have only relied on installations made during that period and not on the power grid.
Nigeria has since resumed power delivery but reduced power supply from 80 megawatts to 46 megawatts. And with power cuts still present, Nigerians continue embracing a range of solutions, including solar lamps and solar water systems.
It's about energy independence. We have the sun for free, and solar is the energy of the future. At the moment, I've installed 4 panels to power a fridge, a fan, and a humidifier. And I'm going to get an inverter and a lithium battery for an air conditioner because I've got a one-month-old baby who's struggling with the heat. But they are expensive, and not everyone can afford it. So you have to decide to invest once and for all.
Most of the solar shops obtain their supplies directly from factories in China, whom sellers say have quicker delivery times.
Our suppliers are in China and also here to provide after-sales service. I studied in China, so our transactions are easier. We place our orders directly through the factory, who guarantee the merchandise is of high quality before sending it.
Access to electricity in Niger remains below 20%, but new projects to improve access are underway. The government obtained funding from the World Bank to increase solar energy access across the country. So far, 15 solar power plants have been installed. The government has also financed wholesalers to supply more solar kits.
If we look at Nigeria's energy supply, it is not enough for Niger, so solar complements it. People use it so that in case there's a power cut, they wouldn't have to use generators. With solar energy, you save money. People even use it to power water pumps for gardening and fish farming. In previous years, solar panels were limited, but it's now within everyone's reach, no matter the budget. It was expensive, but with the state now subsidizing it, it's okay.
All right, to move on to Zambia, is that the Ministry of Fisheries and Livestock is currently finalizing a sanitary protocol with Angola in readiness for the commencement of the formal export for beef. Now, Fishery and Livestock Principal Public Relations Officer Benny Munyama says the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia have also shown interest to export beef from Zambia, while the Democratic Republic of Congo remain a key market for the beef export. Now, on that, Munyama says a government target to export beef worth $1 billion US dollars annually.
Farmers are set for more cash in with the anticipated formal exports of beef. Government recently announced an ambitious plan to boost beef exports over a five-year period. The Ministry of Fisheries and Livestock is currently finalizing sanitary protocols with Angola in readiness for the commencement of the formal export of beef.
Once the sanitary protocols are signed between Zambia and Angola, we intend to start beef exports. So we wish to encourage all stakeholders in the beef export value chain to ensure that they come on board and support this very ambitious government project.
Fisheries and Livestock Principal Public Relations Officer Benny Munyama has disclosed that the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia have also shown interest to import beef from Zambia. The Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, however, remains a key market for beef exports. Mr. Munyama says five pilot animal disease-free compartments have been established in Chikankata and Namwala in Southern Province, Chisamba and Mumbwa in Central Province, and Chipata in Eastern Province. Meanwhile, Veterinary Association of Zambia President Malcolm Chioba has commended government for the great work it is doing in establishing markets for livestock farmers.
We encourage government in the past to give the Minister of Fisheries and Livestock the authority to employ, you know, that has not been, the federal authority has not been given. Employ so that you have enough, you know, human resource to go and provide extension services and services to the farmers so that we increase on the production. Otherwise, it's a very good thing that the Veterinary Association of Zambia welcomes.
The Ministry of Fisheries and Livestock is also developing a financing model to support farmers and processors in meeting export requirements and strengthening disease control measures.
All right, the time is 26 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the Rebuild, an initiative led by the International Rescue Committee, gives people money, training, and support in starting small businesses. Now, the initiative has greatly helped refugees as well as the Ugandan residents and living and even create jobs.
Slink areas of Kampala, refugees are driving a new wave of activity. Divine Kamana came to Uganda 16 years ago. For most of that time, she sold jewelry on the streets, but now she owns a shop in downtown Kampala.
My life has changed. I can now pay my children's school fees without worry, and we no longer stress about food. I even help my husband with the home expenses. I paid back the old loan. I'm now in my third loan cycle and managing it well.
Supported by the Rebuild program, Divine was able to open her first bank account and get training and business advice. Her shop now holds inventory worth more than $1,300 of imported products. In another part of the city, Florence, also a Congolese refugee, is a hairstylist. She received a grant from Rebuild to boost her salon business.
The salon was almost collapsing, but when IRC gave me money, I transformed it, bought new leather seats, got modern hair treatment equipment, and this attracted more customers. We are always busy and making more money. I am so grateful.
Florence is taking the money she makes from the salon and putting it into a grocery store so she can have another income source. Uganda's progressive refugee policies grant freedom of movement, the right to work, and opportunities to start businesses.
In the heart of downtown Kampala, this market is buzzing with new entrepreneurs, many of them refugees. It's not just about making money. It's about dignity, independence, and rebuilding from scratch.
Beyond supporting refugees, Rebuild is unlocking new opportunities for Ugandans as well. Amina, a local beautician, used a loan to buy a dreadlock machine, and now she's growing her business one braid at a time.
I used to crochet a package that's enough for the head. It used to take me 2 days to complete it. But when I'm using this machine, it takes me 2 hours when I'm done. So I can work on 3 people a day.
Since its launch in 2021, the program has created opportunities for more than 10,000 refugees and local nationals in Uganda. But with less money coming in from donors for refugee assistance, self-reliance programs like Rebuild are more urgent than ever.
To be able to look after yourself, say in a city like Kampala, you have to be engaged in some productive activity. Yeah, so that's why we are trying to promote this productivity, economic productivity, so that they are able to utilize the skills that they bring from their home countries to engage in business and to be able to contribute also meaningfully to the social and the economic development of the local communities where they've settled.
Uganda shows that when refugees get the right support, they rebuild their lives and uplift entire communities. However, maintaining this progress requires ongoing support.
All right, there you have it. Now, lastly on the international segment is that the 26-year-old Ripopo man living with a disability says the lack of employment opportunities led to starting his own business.
Kumalo has not allowed his physical disability to deter him from providing for his family. The father of two was born with cerebral palsy. The condition is described as a disorder caused by abnormal brain development that often affects a person's movement and posture. Kumalo says he was unable to further his studies after completing matric due to financial constraints. He then opened this barbershop in 2021 after failing to secure employment.
I was diagnosed with cerebral palsy as a baby. Doctors said I'll struggle to walk as my spinal cord was affected. I started this business because I struggled to get employment due to my disability. And business is going well.
Kumalo's employee says he has taught him a lot about self-discipline.
I came to help my friend here because some of the things he was not able to do, it, like to mop. So I was the one who was helping him to mop. So this guy is the one who taught me how to cut. And now I'm well, I know how to cut because of this guy. So he inspired me every day when I woke up. He's the one who inspired me to come to work.
Some of Kumalo's regular customers, who happen to be twins, say they love Kumalo's establishment as they get world-class customer service.
I have 3 years been custom from Bongi. Since 2021, I've been custom from Bongi, and Bongi is a very good worker. That's why I prefer to come here and support him. I see for another person, so I told myself that I can go and try. So I came here and try, cut me, die, actually. Even if I pay, I don't have a problem.
And a word of advice for other people who are living with various forms of disabilities.
I would like to tell other people who are living with disability that they should not look down on themselves. Anything is possible when you work hard.
We all strive to look and feel good on a daily basis, but it's people like Kumalo, who is dealing with his own personal disability, who go the extra mile to make that a reality for most of us. Biman Baloyi.
Right, there you have it. The time is 33 minutes in the off 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. We can go into a very short commercial break, and once we return, we'll take a listen to what is happening within the country economically.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Chikao shafasana nana longeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene. Anageshifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayakuro nirandithoma yoe yongeshifa yoe kupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende timemeha uka kombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengera selma onarahe tatu imu. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano oniyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lodritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been...
The time is 34 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is early morning skip. Thank you very much for tuning in. And if you're just joining us right now, thank you so much and a very, very good morning to you, dear listeners. Now, to start here in Namibia, in the country or within the Africa, is that Namibia has been linked as 96th. Out of 181 countries in the 2025 Technology and Innovation Report published by the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, which assesses a country's readiness to adopt frontier technologies. The Frontier Technologies Readiness Index evaluates five key pillars: information and communication technology, skills, research and development, industry and finance. Now, based on its imposed score of 0.43, Namibia remains classified as a lower middle economy, unchanged from previous assessment since the index inception in 2021. Now, under the ranking, Namibia has made no change in its position and score is 0.43 in its assessment. Under the ICT ranking, we are placed at 120 skills rank at 114 positions, and research and development places us at 111, industry at 47, and finance at 55. Namibia share the lower middle category with countries such as Trinidad, Tobago, Sri Lanka, and Libya. Now, all of which rank above Namibia. Below Namibia are several other nations from Africa, South America, Asia, and Oceania. Now, most of which fall under the lower middle and lower readiness categories. Now, on the African continent, South Africa is the highest ranked nation, classified as the upper middle economic within the top 60 globally. Morocco and Tunisia also fall in this upper middle budget. Now, the index methodology established in the 2021 report scores country on a scale from 0 to 1. For 2024, the United States, Sudan, and the United Kingdom recorded the highest scores, demonstrating strong capabilities in adapting and benefiting from advanced technologies such as artificial intelligence, robotics, and green energy innovations. Now, the Secretary General, Rebecca Greenspan, rather emphasize that understanding the adaptation of frontier technologies is essential in preparing economic for new waves of industrial transformation. Now, frontier technologies, particularly artificial intelligence, are reshaping economics and societies. but their rapid spread is also often outpacing government ability to respond effectively. That's what he said. Now, in the 2025 report explores how governments can design policies that ensure inclusive technological development. Now, it highlights the risk of increased inequality if access to emerging technologies remains concentrated among a few powerful companies and, of course, countries. Now, if not guided by ethical oversight and transparency, the uneven diffusion of AI could also exacerbate existing global inequalities. That's what he warned. Now, the report also identifies three critical pillars for the successful adaptation of those technologies that include infrastructure, data, and skills. Now, those are essential for rebuilding resilient system, promising inclusive industrialization, driving sustainable innovation. Now, he also pointed out the significant concentration of AI development in a handful of companies and countries, which could further widen existing digital divides. Now, from a nation perspective, the report records tailored policies to support the development, adaptation, and ethical use of AI. Now, from a global also perspective, it advocates for international governance frameworks to guide AI toward inclusive and equitable outcomes. Now, the 2025 report underscores the need for global cooperation, comprehensive measurement, and strategies policy making to ensure frontier technologies contribute meaningfully to achieving the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals and fostering long-term inclusive development. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the Josiah Shipingana, a farmer and volunteer trainer at Kanan Garden in the Omaheke region, has voiced concern over the lack of youth involvement in the community agriculture project. Now, Shipingana leads a farming initiative on 19 hectares of land in Omaheke, where they primarily cultivate beans using aerobic organic compost to boost yield. Now, despite the project's success, Shipingana expressed disappointment at the limited participation of young people. Namibia can only become self-sustaining in food production when you empower local with right agriculture skills and technologies. That's what he said. Now, he noted that most of the participation in the project are aidless and with very few young people contributing. Namibia is rich in land and natural resources, but young people in community like this, one needs serious attention and rehabilitation from alcohol and drug abuse. That's what he said. Now, Shipingana also criticized what he sees as a growing tendency among youth to avoid volunteering in community initiatives with still expecting to benefit from their outcomes. Now, Kanan Garden produces Nakara and Kiopis, which are used to feed local residents and are also sold in nearby markets. Now, according to the Global Risk Report 2024, food security and economic inequality are among the top risks facing Namibia. Now, the report highlights that effective risk management requires comprehensive analysis and the implementation of sustainable strategies. Now, in her State of the Nation address, President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah announced that the government will inject about $561 million into agriculture infrastructure. She also reaffirmed the government's goal to reduce agricultural import by 80%, as supported by the National Development Plan, support this vision. Now, to ensure those initiatives succeed, young people must be equipped, motivated, and encouraged to actively participate in community-driven agricultural projects like Kanan Garden. That's what Shipingana said. Now, on this, we can take a listen to this particular conversation.
Yes, we are continuing with Early Morning Scoop. We are looking at food security. We are looking at sustainable production of food security. I got into the conversation with one of the farmers and also a trainer in the agriculture sector coming from that side of Maheka region, Epukiro, just when he decided to embark on the project of uplifting, you know, local communities on how to make their own food to sustain themselves and also to make sure that they contribute to the Namibian economy and sustainable food development. Now, I got into the conversation with Mr. Josiah Shipingana to unpack particularly the area of the harvest of farm Kanana Garden or Kanana Garden in Maheke region. So, good morning, Dr. Shipingana, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Yes, good morning, Mr. David, and welcome also to Eagle FM, to the listener from my side, as usual.
Yes, Dr. Shipingana, let us look at the harvest or maybe the project that we're embarking upon, particularly on upgrading marginalized community in Maheke region. Looking at the context of what you have been doing, how is the harvest going and how much you have gained from that volunteerism and also that sustainable food production project?
Thank you very much. As usual, for me, I have entered into Kanana Garden to on a voluntary basis, you mentioned.
Yeah.
That happened earlier, 24 December 2024,
yeah,
up until then 31st January 2025, whereby I started with the training to ensure that people are capacitated, people are enhanced, people are equipped, to enable for them to have the necessary skills. And that skill is what will speak to the need, that capacity what will speak to the need, if we want to achieve what we call self-reliant as a nation, in terms of job creation, in terms of food security, or self-sufficiency as I mentioned.
Yeah.
And not only that, one of the key sectors that have been, you know, the problematic is that when you look at the mesh, the garden mentioned earlier, is to say this land has been abandoned because it's one of the land that have been utilized in the past by the Catholic church or mission to say, and the gentleman who was in charge of this land apparently passed on some years back. I cannot go back to history, but just to unpack, as you are saying. Now, this, for me, this created dependence because he was at the forefront of producing himself. But what we want as a nation, because when I say what we want, I'm speaking on behalf of every Namibian within the agricultural sector and every Namibian who understood the importance of hands-on towards self-reliance, is to say we should have a system of our own that is meant to speak to the needs of our people, which does not create dependence, but rather equip, teach, enhance, like I mentioned, so that our people, they have a know-how. In English, they got a very good way to say, no, when you got fish, apparently don't give people fish, but rather teach people how to fish. And that speak quite loud enough to the needs. And now, as a person with a little know-how, indigenous and the international, for that matter, I do understand as to why, and this is why I enter into Kanana Garden on voluntary basis to ensure that I have played a role as a Namibian and ensure that I have contributed toward development and also to make a difference for those who are in need, for those who are marginalized. I don't like a word, but I mean, we have to use it. It's a must.
Yeah,
because, you know, many other times, I think by now we are 35 years old. And this word, it cannot be, we cannot do away with it, but it should be minimized by now. But it can only be minimized if we decide to have hands-on. But if we do not have hands-on, then obviously we cannot. So therefore, what I'm saying is that, for me, I'm pleased because at the end of the day, the harvest is picking quite enough to the need, and it's quite pleasing because about 19 hectares planted with beans, which we said obviously is cowpeas, nakara, and so on. And this, the aim also to plant, the aim also to plant the beans, which I mentioned to say cowpeas and nakara, was to restore the nitrogen needed to the soil, because the soil has been abandoned for some time, and that's what we need for the process of photosynthesis to take place, because we want to restore nitrogen to the soil, so that other plants which are not legumes, can then get nitrogen, which then in return going to enhance the green pigment, which is chlorophyll, enable plant to use sunlight as energy to make their own food. Very, very important.
Yes, Tata Spigana, while we are there, let us look at, you said the whole 19 hectares was planted with beans. Let us look in your basic estimation, how many bags of maize, I mean, how many bags of beans did that farm produce? And maybe, how is the involvement of the community?
Currently, I might not have the clear number in terms of number, because the harvest is still going on. It's not yet done. But all I can tell you, I should only have to say it's 19 hectares, and every bin, because we planted about 50 kg of bean, which means 25 kg of nakara and 25 kg of cowpeas. So that makes 100 kg that was covered in 1980, and the harvest is still going on. So for now, I might not give you an example, but it's very, very convincing, and it's pleasing. It's got tangible results, and I'm saying, and I'm urging again, that currently we've got people that have been affected by flood in our regions, or in Namibia, and the office of the Prime Minister has been at the forefront to support. So how about if we turn things around by maybe calling the office of the Prime Minister to come to the rescue and buy these beans once off, go to the office of the Prime Minister, and then these beans can then be distributed among those that are affected. And then this money will circulate within the nation again, and this is what's going to promote social economic. You understand? And automatic, in a way, job creation. And also, just to emphasize, it's also going to encourage those who withdraw from the beginning, because remember, there were people who withdraw from the beginning because they were not part and parcel of the idea intensive, but you know, because why, that is understanding. And also to encourage those other regions, not only Maheke, to do the same. Not only in beans, we are talking about food security in general, without plant in being cereal, being what, as long as we are saying food security.
Yes, maybe the last question, how was the involvement of young people from that area? Were they helpful, or were they also part of the work?
The answer is negative. Of course, yes, they were not that. And yes, I can tell from experience, because I have been in all areas or in the regions of this nation, and what I have seen from the look of things, that our youth are not willing, you know, to participate fully, because
What can be the challenges that they are facing for them not to participate?
There are a lot of challenges. We might not finish to mention them, but I'll mention a few. One of the challenges that I have seen, they do not understand that agriculture could be a key sector or a key area that's going to create jobs. They want to see it done today and materialize tomorrow. You understand? They are looking on a short term, you know. Secondly, our people are more into drugs and alcohol. So at the end of the day, we are running a risk among our youth. So if I can give you a practical example, the current president, so who is saying she's willing to invest heavily in the youth or empowering the youth? It's a very good thing, but I'm calling for every Namibian, more especially our parents and the individual, to take the lead and they look with a close eye to say, we are at risk of drugs abuse and alcohol, and this it's more among youth. Mm-hmm. And we are saying the youth in the future. How are we going to have the future if we are not building the foundation now? When we say the foundation, it's not necessary to give, you know, let's say, for instance, capital or any other equipment needed, or maybe to equip them in that way. Mm. But to ensure that they are being well informed, those who can, who are willing to, not by force,
yeah,
so that they understand. Otherwise, the future is not bright.
Yes, fair enough. Thank you very much, Mr. Shipingana, for joining us this morning, and thank you very much for the time.
No problem. Thank you very much.
All right.
It's 53 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that my colleague, Zafia Basun, spoke to Nepolo Palastis, an entrepreneur and a business leader, regarding Workers' Day. We might take a listen.
Good morning, Mr. Parastas. How are you doing?
Yes, I'm very well. Good morning, AQFM family and Namibia.
Wonderful. On Thursday was Workers' Day in Namibia, and the occasion was observed at the Oshakati Stadium in the north, where President Nandin Daitwa delivered a message to the workers. Mr. Parastas, you are an entrepreneur in various sectors and a prominent business leader within Namibia Chambers of Commerce. We would like to hear your thoughts as we celebrate the country's labor force. To begin, could you explain why we celebrate Workers' Day and dedicate a day to honor them?
Yes, thank you very much once more again. I think from my own view, and also from my number of experience in the industry, and also as well as an employer, Workers need to be celebrated because a company can only be called in a company when you are more than two. Then if it's a business without more than two people, then it's not a company. So then workers are actually the owner of the business. It's not necessary as the employers that have found the businesses. The workers are actually the important vehicle to drive any business. However, I would love to emphasize that workers and employers must have a very good relationship. And if workers must understand, or employees must understand, that they are the owner of the business, because even though the business is not doing well, they are recording and they are noting that they, even when they are not paid that month, it's actually a company that owes them. That means a company, does not matter how good or how bad the company is performing, the employees or workers has to get paid. That means they are the biggest majority shares of the business. So I also want to highlight that when the associations that represent workers sometimes consult them and they try to create awareness, they are right and all that. Sometimes they mislead the employees, and sometimes also they create slightly misunderstanding hybrid between the employer and workers. If they could say the language or speak the language that I'm trying to speak, that, you know, the workers or employees are the owner of the business, because it does not matter how big, how bad the business is doing, they must be paid. They must collect their, you know, their profit shares or whatever, called the wage or a salary. So I think economy like Namibia post-COVID, we really need to speak a different language, because we all have to strive wherever you are. If you are then work as a journalist, you get to do your work like you are doing it now. You get to say, even though it's a Friday, I have to get relevant news so that the country can flourish economically, or the economy can revive. All of us really have to understand that we have a responsibility of growing the economy. But if we say them and us, that will never work. Because that's what I refer to, that when the union that are representing workers are talking to workers, sometimes really they misread them, and when they come back even to work after they get awareness or they get educated from the unions, you will see that their performance drop really drastically. So that's why I'm saying the unions have really the union leaders must also understand the importance of the employers and also the importance of the employees. This relationship, I cannot overemphasize it, that we need to strengthen the relationship between workers and employers.
Mm. Namibia is facing a number of labor-related disputes. As a business leader, what solutions do you propose to address these issues?
As a business leader, I believe that if there is open communication from either side, then we wouldn't have a lot of dispute. The arbitrators manipulating last, and we might even need, suppose, the arbitrators. Arbitrators could be turned into promotion, job creation in the country. Because now, even ministers of labor, sometimes they are even not talking about how to create employment. They don't even share their plan how to contribute towards the job creation in the country. Their focus is just to see whether there is any arbitration or any differences between an employer and it.
Hello Namibia. The NSA is conducting the Household Income and Expenditure Main Survey from the 28th of April 2025 to the 22nd of April 2026. Our officials in NSA uniforms, IDs and branded vehicles will visit selected households in all 14 regions. Hashtag Your Data Matters.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
A lot of dispute. The arbitrators manipulating last, and we might even need, suppose, the arbitrators. Arbitrators could be turned into promotion, job creation in the country. Because now, even ministers of labor, sometimes they are even not talking about how to create employment. They don't even share their plan how to contribute towards the job creation in the country. Their focus is just to see whether there is any arbitration or any differences between an employer and an employee, which was not supposed to be a case. So with me, I believe that if we all understand our responsibility, if the business is doing well, pay as you agree, even though the business is not doing well. Because in most cases, let me say 90% or 95%,
mm-hmm.
when the employer give employment opportunity to the worker or to the employees, they agree on the wage or the salary. It's okay from today onwards, and in most cases they are even signing in the contract that, okay, we are entering into a relationship. Therefore, let's sign with $100 per month. Every 30th of the month, I will give you $100. And in most cases, when now the labor representative or the unions come and talk to the employees, they don't ask them even their contracts or their agreement to say, how much do you agree with your employer? They just start saying, you know, if you are getting $100, then you are being exploited. You are not getting what you are supposed to get. But the agreement is there that when they enter into relationship, the agreement is $100. And if the employer honors that $100 every month, it means the relationship was supposed to be smooth. So, employees have to understand that they have responsibility to offer a best client service and a best customer relationship, and also put effort to perform so that the business grows. Because if the business grows and they can see clearly that the business is growing, I don't believe there's a way that the employer will fail to give them fair wages that really can uplift their livelihood. It's really something that I want to emphasize, that we must have a quite very smooth relationship between the employer and the employees or workers. And also the unions, they must understand that in most cases why youth and a lot of people are in the street is mislead the employees. Because if you mislead them and tomorrow they demonstrate, they want increment, and the company don't have any budget to increase, tomorrow you will find out that the employer will say, look, guys, if you see that you can no longer work on the wages or the salary that we have agreed upon, I'd rather go back to the drawing board and look for new employees, which is very bad for the business. Because now new employees means new relationship, new working experience, and the list goes. And these guys will go in the street with their experience that they have gained over time from the business. They will just put that experience in the street, which is not good. So therefore, I'm really emphasizing and advise that employers must also definitely bring their side. If they are making good profit, they must pay people their wages.
Yeah.
But if the business is not doing good, we must also think about it as a company openly. You say the company is not performing, and the reason why we are not performing is because of this area. If it's then marketing, it's marketing. If then maybe technicians that are, in my case, I have technicians. If the technical team are not giving quality and the customers are not appreciating the quality of the service that we are giving, we'll let eye on that. So we discuss openly so that at least we realize a very profitable organization, and all of us in the end of the day was.
Yeah. Lastly, you mentioned a few solutions and stuff, as well as you mentioned also advice to the employers as well as employees. But I want to ask you, what message do you have for the employees and employers, labor unions, and the Ministry of Labor, lastly?
It's collaborative attitude. We should have a collaborative attitude. We must not call each other them and us. We must know that we all strive to have a better economy, a better Namibia, that should provide a better quality of employment. I give a typical example, because we Namibians are paying much better. But I give a typical example for the Chinese brothers. They pay low wages. That's why their products are very cheap. And this one is an eco trading system. You know, if you are offering, if the Chinese are selling cheaper products and we are flocking there, that means their profit, it's actually borrowed from the wage that they are supposed to give, a better wage that they are supposed to give to the workers. But they never give something that they do not agree with the employer. When our brothers and sisters are working for the Chinese company, they know exactly how much they are supposed to get at the end of the month.
Mm.
You know, they are not forced into that relationship. So what I'm saying is, our Minister of Labour and also unions, they must understand that if one day they become employers, just even for a week, they will realize that really what the employers are playing in this employment role is quite important. And as I said, the collaborative and the mutual understanding between the three parts, which is now the unions, labor, and the employers, we must stay up. We need to strive to make Namibia better through collaborative effort.
Thank you very much, Mr. Barastas.
You're welcome, and Lily, I appreciate AGOSM for really disseminating the right information to the public. And I believe those that want to advertise their businesses, I really advise them to use AGOSM.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
Likewise. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, there you have it. Mr. Barastas there just emphasized the importance of employees in any organization, asserting that workers essentially act as co-workers or co-owners of the businesses they support. So you also advocate the mutual respect and, of course, enhance relationship among employees, employers, and unions, highlighting that collaboration is essential for the advancement of Namibia's economy. Now, in light of ongoing labor dispute, Barastas also suggests that the open communication and, of course, transparency in wage negotiation could also serve as effective solution. So now, furthermore, he urged the Ministry of Labour and Union to adopt a balanced perspective by recognising the responsibility and challenges also that employees encounter, particularly in difficult economic time. We might take a listen also to one of the entrepreneurs that also shared his views on this regard.
A Labor Day, that is also known as an International Day,
mm-hmm.
is an annual celebration held on May 1st to honor the contribution of workers
mm-hmm.
and the labor movement. It is a day recognized to hard work, dedication of people across all sectors, from office
mm-hmm.
workers to factory laborers, teachers to truck drivers.
Mm-hmm.
This day is rooted in the late 19th century when labor activists pushed for federal holiday to recognize many contributions workers have made to America,
mm-hmm.
America's strength, prosperity, and well-being.
Mm.
Here in Namibia, after the Namibian first universal election in 1994, May 1st was adopted as a public holiday,
mm-hmm.
which was celebrated for the first time in 1995. This was done by our founding president, His Excellency, life rest in peace, Dr. Safeshona Semi Nujoma.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we see that Namibia is facing also several labor-related disputes, of course. And as a business leader, how can maybe we address and, of course, resolve those issues?
I think to answer the question why we have to celebrate the workers,
mm-hmm,
first of all, the workers are the people that are shaping the world.
Mm.
Secondly, all the infrastructure that we are seeing around us, mm. they are existing because of the worker.
Mm.
Without the worker, we wouldn't have road infrastructure, electrical networks.
Mm.
We wouldn't have pipeline that are bringing water to us.
Mm.
We wouldn't have chairs and tables that we are sitting in our offices. And we wouldn't have buildings where we are working from. That is why a worker is an important person that shapes the world.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, labor dispute, as you have rightly put it, mm-hmm. there are quite a number of them that is being faced or we are facing on a daily basis. I think on my own opinion, business systems and policies are very crucial, and also contracts that are, you know, clearly stipulating what is expected from the employer side and also from the employee side, so that we can, you know, prevent some of these disputes. And if this dispute occurs, I think it's very important that employee and employers sit down around the tables and discuss so that these disputes can amicably be resolved.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, now maybe just finally, before we let you go, what is your message to the employers, employees, employers, and of course labor unions, and of course the Ministry of Labor itself?
As I just stated earlier on that unions are very important institutions amongst us, and also workers, they are very important for the economy. We believe in their abilities, their hard work. That's why they need to be taken care of, and then they also need to be fairly compensated.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, I want to wish all the employees a renewed dedication. I thank all the workers for their hard work, dedication, and their contribution, because without them, we won't have growth in our economy. Now that we had a break yesterday, mm-hmm. I want to believe that we have come with strength, and then we will carry on with our responsibility and build this economy.
Thank you so much, Mr. Tangeni, for having you.
You are welcome, and thank you very much for having me.
All right. All right, lastly, Victoria Jowell in the education sector as well shared her thoughts on this regard.
Why we celebrate workers, especially from the business aspect, mm-hmm. Without workers, we do not have a business operating.
Mm.
So, and also without businesses, we do not have employees that can actually call themselves workers. So these two very important parties are very much important. And for us, we feel, as much as we celebrate it, we have a single day singled out, we should still be celebrating our workers on a daily basis, not just on the day that is dedicated for them.
Okay. What ways does the maybe NSCCI recognize and, of course, appreciate the contribution of workers to Namibia's economy?
Okay, you have to take note that the Chamber is not a union, but... Okay. An organization for business members. So the Chamber facilitates advocacy for an environment for businesses to operate in that is friendly and that can also drive their performance of the businesses in a good state, which also contributes to employees. Once we have an environment, a business environment that is good for a business to function, this will also contribute to the growth or the business or the development, which will also contribute to the well-being of the workers that will be working for these different type of businesses.
Mm.
So the Chamber is very high on the advocacy point, which makes businesses possible to function. And lastly, again, just to point back to employees, that's how they benefit at the end of the channel.
Okay, maybe just finally, what is your message to employees, to employers, labor unions, and of course the Ministry of Labor itself?
I believe the relationship between all of us is very important, and regular engagement, stakeholder engagement need to take place. Of course, with the, I appreciate the laws that are being, that have been implemented by the Ministry of Labor, but we also believe that more engagement need to take place between us, the business people, the unions, as well as the ministry, to be able to update certain labor, labor laws and labor policies, so that we, they also align with the different sectors. Because some of them, it's one size fits all, but, the business sectors do not function the same. If somebody in production, somebody in education, somebody in manufacture, in construction, so the employees also work differently in these different sectors. So we believe that if we can engage, do regular engagement together, it will minimize the strikes, labor strikes, also from employees with companies, and create a better relationship where we can all be satisfied at the end of the day. Personally, just want to say Happy Workers' Day to everybody, as well as the businesses, the business owners. We are also much very important on this day because we do create employment. Let's work together as a team and contribute to the economic development of our country and the wealth creation as well as one.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Ms. Victoria.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right.
Okay, bye.
There you have it. The time is 19 minutes in the of 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. We'll go into a very short commercial break, but once we return, we'll take you through the next item.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsie Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholics Maneka Karunga, the Afrikaans Sing for Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-238-0683. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact.
We'll come back. The time is 21 minutes in the of 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the Prime Minister, earlier, Borele has pledged ongoing government support for small and medium enterprises in the Kavango East region, reaffirming the sector vital role in Namibia's economic development. Now, Borele made a surprise visit in the Buslink Rundu Open Market on Friday, where he interacted with vendors, purchased locally made products, and reiterated the government commitment to empowerment small businesses. Now, our SMEs are the heartbeat of our economy. By supporting them, we are building stronger communities and creating more opportunities of our youth and families. That's what he said. So every time you buy from a local vendor, you are not just supporting a business. You are encouraging growth and resilience. That's what he said. So as a symbolic gesture to promote local entrepreneurship, the Prime Minister purchased traditional goods, including Bambara nuts and handcraft wooden furniture. Now, his visit was warmly welcomed by traders, and many whom said they felt seen and appreciated at the highest level for the first time. Now, Maria Ricoro, one of the vendors indicated that the premier visit gives them hope. Now, it shows that government leaders care about us. We are very happy that someone from the government came to support our businesses and brought from almost every store, as she said. Now, Likoro ended the Prime Minister's presence helped restore confidence among informal traders. We have hoped that this new government truly stands with the people, not only those in the cities, but also those of us in the rural areas. That's what she stated. Now, vendors express optimism that Guralek engagement would inspire other government ministries to prioritize SME support and address challenges facing the informal economy. Guralek's market tour is a part of a broader mission to connect with citizens at the grassroots level, promote inclusive economic policies, and ensure that national development efforts benefit all Namibians. Now, the Prime Minister urged all citizens to support local businesses and affirmed his administration's intent to strengthen initiatives aimed at helping SMEs flourish. Echoing the Prime Minister's sentiments, Minister of Gender Equality and Child Welfare Emma Kantema Jeomas emphasized the critical role SMEs plays in Namibia's economy. She called for increased support, particularly for women and informal business owners. Now, the contribution of SMEs to Namibia's economy cannot be overstated. We must prioritize inclusive growth by supporting women-led and informal enterprises through targeted programs that generate meaningful economic opportunities. That's what Kantema said. Now, to move on to the next item is that the future of Energy Security Summit held in London recently underscored the rapid transformations occurring in the global energy sector, highlighting shifting demand patterns, increased electrification, technological innovation, and evolving investment trends. Now, co-hosted by UK government and the International Energy Agency, the summit brought together leaders from 60 governments and executives from 50 major energy companies. Now, the gathering aimed to shape a more resilient and secure energy future amid growing volatility and geopolitical complexity. Now, Executive Director Peter Barrow emphasized the critical importance of energy security in today's world. Energy is the foundation of modern life. Without energy security, there can be no economic stability. Energy poverty will persist, and sustainability goals will remain out of reach. Now, 50 years since the establishment, this summit reaffirmed that energy security remains a top global priority, as already said. Now, he also noted that the energy sector is entering a new age of electricity driven by the clean energy technologies and digital advancement. Now, while this shift creates new opportunities, it also introduces fresh vulnerabilities and the diversification of supply, whether oil or gas or critical minerals, remains a golden rule of energy security. We must be prepared to act quickly and correctively. That's what he added. Now, according to the IEA, modern energy system are undergoing rapid changes due to the coverage of factors, shifting consumption patterns, electrification, innovation, and investment shift. Now, compounding those changes, internal shocks such as the COVID-19 pandemic, ongoing regional conflicts, cyber and physical attacks on energy infrastructure, intensifying climate events, and raising geopolitical tensions. Now, in light of those dynamics, the agency advocates for a whole-of-system approach to energy security, one that considers all fuel type, technologies, and other tendencies. Now, energy security must be viewed in tandem with economy, national, climate, and digital security. Adding that diverse stakeholder engagement includes governments, industries, civil society, and regional voices will be crucial to navigating the future. Now, the UK Prime Minister Starmer anchored those sentiments, calling energy security a matter of national security. Energy security is national security, and it is fundamental duty of government. Now, in the UK, we are moving to make energy a source of strength, security, and pride rather than vulnerability and concern. That's what he said. Now, European Commission President also highlighted European commitment to clean and affordable energy. Reliable and affordable energy is the lifeblood of our economies. Now, it also underpins our industry and economic competitiveness. Now, that's what she said. Now, she also announced that the EU will mobilize over 100 billion euro to support clean manufacturing under a new clean industrial deal, reinforcing European push for self-sufficiency in clean energy technologies. Now, the summit featured a wide range of participants, from major energy importers and exporters to national grappling with energy access, affordability, and climate adaptation. Now, all stakeholders shared the goal of building stronger consensus and collaborative strategies to address both traditional and emerging energy security challenges. And that marks the last update of the day. Thank you so much, dear listeners all over the world, to listen to us today. Thank you so much. And I appreciate you. I wish you also the best on listening to all the program of today. And from me, Lois Shimi, it's a very good day. But before I get, I say a good boy, head over to my colleagues at the Michael Shaveri. Do not forget to rather join us or connect with us on our social media platform, Eagle from Namibia, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as our WhatsApp channel, and that is the Eagle FM Media House. Please do not forget to subscribe and catch up on the daily news update, and of course the newspaper alerts every day. It's released, that's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Do not also forget to download our app, Eagle FM app. You find it on your Google Play Store and of course your App Store, as well as the Imba app. Thank you so much for joining us today, and I wish you all the best. And of course, I will hand over to my colleague, Tate Michael Shaveri, to take you through the unpacking of the day.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudiha utekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Chikawa shafa sana nana nongeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyawo ota ingongotisa mwene. Anangeshifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayakuro ni randitoma yoe yongeshifa yoe kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo yu mo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma onarahe tatu imwe. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano oniaj. Eagle FM, the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.